Coming up on This Week in Enterprise Tech, bring your own device to work. Does Google have Comcast running scared? And DEFCON, DEFCON, DEFCON. Quiet on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the following show is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, recorded July 30th, 2012. Episode 3, It is a Tablet. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. It just takes a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into high-definition video conferencing. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code ENTERPRISE. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech. It's the show dedicated to the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and the geek who just wants to know how the world is connected. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballasaire, the digital Jesuit, your guide to all things in the enterprise. And I'm joined here today by a wonderful panel of guests, starting with the ever-present Brian Chi. Brian, how is Hawaii today?
Good morning from Honolulu. It's a gorgeous day in the 80s and a light breeze.
80s and light breeze. I do believe my hate for you is growing, but that's not going to affect my next guest, Mr. Curtis Franklin. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, Father Robert. We're in Florida where we've got tropical showers, low 90s for both temperature and humidity, standard Florida summer.
Correct. Now, of course, we've got someone from Hawaii. We've got someone from Florida, so we needed a guest from California. And that's to my right. We have Mr. Matthew Gast from Aerohive. Matthew, thank you very much for coming on.
You're very welcome. Next time, I think I'll do this from Italy.
Yes. Well, you know, it's sort of our motif. We're engineers. And this is what we do, right? Okay. So now the first bit of news we want to cover is Google's fiber rollout. We spoke a little bit about this last week, and we got the details this week. We got $75 for a gigabit connection, $125 for gigabit plus TV. It's fantastic. It's crazy. It's a game changer. What do you guys think about this? I mean, is it a stunt? Is this really the start of a nationwide rollout? Where is Google going? I'm going to make that an open question.
I don't know, but I put my reservation in even though I'm in Hawaii.
I think a lot of people feel like you. I actually, we have a Jesuit residence in Kansas City, and I've asked them to put their reservation in. They don't want it, but I told them I'll pay for it just to have it so I can visit every once in a while and use fiber goodness. Matthew, have you been following this at all?
Not really. Of course, I'm very lucky to live in San Francisco, which is one of the most overbuilt cities in the world as far as distance from a central office. So I have a really long loop. I'm 7,000 feet away from the CO. But that caps me at about 7 megabits, and I would love to go faster.
Now, Curtis, question to you. There has been some movement on Comcast's side. Now, they're denying that it has anything to do with Google's announcement, but they recently doubled the available bandwidth for their top-tier plans from 25 to 50 megabits per second and 50 up. Does that tell you that they're running scared, or is this just something that they don't care about?
I think that if they're not running scared, they're certainly very aware of this. Now, I'm with a cable provider that's not Comcast, and what I've noticed hasn't been so much an upgrading of their stated prices, but the actual performance that you're getting at a particular level has been growing over the last few months. I live in one of the cities that bid heavily to become a Google city. We lost out to Kansas City. But I've noticed that the level that I'm paying for, the performance has nearly doubled in the past 7 months. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. The cable companies are certainly very aware of this. They don't want to be poorly compared to Google, really regardless of where Google ends up going with all this.
Right. Now, one of the questions that has come up again and again has been, well, is this really going to be a gigabit? I mean, yes, you've got fiber to your house. Sure, you've got fiber back to the Google Colo, whatever that might look like. But we had a bandwidth cap special not too long ago where they were saying how all these lines are oversubscribed. So even if you think you're getting, say, 25 megabits per second, you're not actually getting that at peak times. Someone suggested that Google has a way around that because they actually run a lot of the services that drive a lot of traffic. You look at Google Search, you look at YouTube, you look at some of the media-heavy websites, those actually reside on Google servers. So it could be that if you're watching YouTube, you really do get gigabit per second. But what happens when it has to be handed off? Brian?
Well, I tell you, a lot of this problem is where are you transiting the network? So because Google has so many services up way at the top, you've got a lot less network to traverse. A lot of things need to change. You know, at the university, I've been spoiled forever and ever having gig to the lab and 10 gig off the island. But it's really going to make a difference as people start, as the ISP start doing bigger and bigger pipes. You're going to have better and better services. More interesting things are going to start happening. Video conferencing is a big one. We've all noticed how Skype breaks up once in a while. This is something that needs to change in the long run.
Yeah, well, I think we could all agree that no matter what Google's intentions are, this is a welcome change in an industry that has really stagnated over the last few years. We're talking about companies that have increased prices without really increasing deliverables, all the while claiming that they're not being paid enough. And I think we're all a little tired of that. Matthew, Curtis, tell me what you would expect to see over the next couple of months as hopefully Google rolls this out to more and more cities.
I'd like to see a bunch of people getting scared that this very compelling offering actually takes off and we get the opportunity to actually subscribe. The best way to drive this is with competition. And whenever I find a superior service, I sign up for it. I try and buy better cars. I try and buy better computers. Why on earth wouldn't I do that with internet access?
Right.
I think it's going to be interesting because from an overall business perspective, while we are focused on the internet connectivity, I think from the cable provider's point of view, the much more interesting question is the television side of this. Are we going to start seeing an era when the money that we pay for cable access to the internet subsidizes what we pay for television? We've seen the reverse for a long time. Are we going to see those curves crossing sometime soon? I think that's much more interesting. For businesses, of course, for the enterprise, it's welcome knowing that we can simply get to our branch offices, to home office locations, to various small installations, much higher speeds. But for the business as a whole, I think the television side of this is much more interesting, even though we're not talking about it nearly as much right now.
Yeah. I want to give the last word actually to a member of our chat room. Ken from Chicago was saying how in Chicago they actually have 105 megabits per second from Comcast right now. And actually Comcast just offered a brand spanking new plan that I think is available to four people. They're the only ones close enough to the switches. That goes up to 305 megabits per second, but they are charging a whopping $300 a month. I think if Google can come in and charge $70 a month for internet or $120 a month for internet plus TV, I think we do get to that converged network that Curtis is talking about. And again, that's only good for us, right?
No question.
Okay. Let's put Google to bed for a second, and I want to talk a little bit about DEF CON. Now, DEF CON is not always associated with the enterprise because, well, people consider it anti-enterprise. It's anti-business. It's a security meeting that happens in Las Vegas every year. It's always canceled every year. And it brings together some of the best and the brightest and some brand new players to the field. I was able to go this last week, and even though I wasn't able to shoot that much video because security people are notorious for being camera shy, we did manage to get a little bit of a video. So enjoy a summary of DEF CON.
I have discovered the web, and it is glorious. I'm just the
going to have some fun.
So that's DEF CON in 2 minutes. Now, a lot of people were complaining about the shaky camera. That's just because, well, a lot of people aren't allowed to film in DEF CON. So most of the time we were sort of hiding cameras underneath our shoulders, just trying to get a decent shot. Now, a lot of people associate DEF CON with hackers and crackers and people running around in goth makeup and black clothes. But there were some normal people there, too. So what I want to do is, Brian, as a former federal agent, you once told me that you could lose your security clearances by going to DEF CON.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we, especially in the early years, we were discouraged from going to there. Some of us did some work that was, shall we say, not real popular in certain parts of the world. So we didn't want, they didn't want our faces plastered all over the place. And that game called Find the Fed is, they're pretty good at it.
Yes, yeah, actually, they're really good at it. Well, I bring that up because there was a huge shift this year. DEF CON has always been the place that's been against the FBI, against the NSA, against the CIA. But the key speaker, the keynote speaker, was actually the head of the NSA. That's right. He showed up and he talked about the social responsibility of the hacker. I think the bottom line message was, we know you're going to hack. We know you're some of the best. So if you're going to do it, why not do it for your country? Matthew, you've gone to DEF CON. How does that strike you?
It does not fit at all with the experience I had when I went last year.
What was the experience?
Well, it's always interesting to go to Las Vegas. My favorite part, of course, is leaving Las Vegas. But you're right that it's very much an anti-establishment crowd. I felt like I stuck out a lot. For having a job with a company.
Now, before we go any further, I do want to say I want to thank Will Iris. His Twitter name is at SPBlatt. He was the one who put that video together for us that we just played for you. And you know, he's a fantastic DEF CON-er. You saw him running around with the camera. He did a lot of work to put that together. Now, I do want to show a little something that we picked up at DEF CON. If you can give me my my close up single here, this is actually the badge that you got at DEF CON. No, that's not the badge, but this is the badge that we're going to be showing you in just a second as soon as it gets switched over. There we go. This is actually the badge that we all received. So every conference, you need your ID. You need something that indicates that you're supposed to be there. This year at DEF CON, we got these boards, which were based on an 8-core propeller. It's from, what's the name of the network? From Parallax. It's an 8-core, 32-bit, 80 megahertz chip that we were able to program. Now, there was a little game that was associated with this, and that is everyone who had different roles at DEF CON had different color badges. So, for example, this one was for press. Red was for goons, the people who actually put on the show. Black was the Uber badge. Only their very top-level DEF CONers got that. Then there was yellow for artists. There was another green one for vendors. There was a white one for contest. And then there were the human badges, the people who actually paid to go to the conference. They got badges that looked exactly alike with slightly different designs down below. And you would actually get them close to another badge. You would sync up via this IR port, and you would get a little bit of a bit of information. It would tell you that you've synced with a goon or synced with an Uber or synced with a media person. And as you collected more and more of those bits, you got closer to actually displaying a hint for the crypto game. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because this has been in the DEF CON mentality forever. They want to make a game out of DEF CON. Curtis, what's your impression of how this is melding with business? I mean, more and more of these people are being hired for actual work in the business world. I mean, the head of cybersecurity for the United States is now the leader of DEF CON, Dark Tangent.
Well, we're seeing a number of things come together. One, I think it's a good thing that the government has recognized that they need talent that might be hard to manage, might be hard to put into the normal rigid cubicles that federal workers have traditionally gone into. That's a good thing. Now, I'm glad I don't have to manage one of these teams, but I'm glad they're willing to do it. As far as the badges, I think that's fascinating, and that's something that I actually expect to see used in more and more enterprises. We've seen badges used for multiple things. I mean, we now can use the same badge to get us in the physical door and be part of our sign-on process to a workstation. I think that when you add that to the gamification that we hear about being a process that's being used by more companies to provide incentive, to provide ways for employees to improve in what they do, you end up with something like this, ways for teams to come together, ways to encourage casual interactions. I think there are a lot of great possibilities there.
Something else I do want to point out, if you could go back to that that single. If you did all the bits on your badge, you would get a clue that would actually point to the lanyard. Now, most people think the lanyard is a throwaway. It's just the thing that holds your badge. But a few of us on the first day noticed that there were these patterns on the lanyards that were not all the same. You actually had three different patterns. Exactly. It's tape. It's computer tape. So this was actually a computer program. You needed to input it into an emulator, which would lead you to the next part of the challenge. It's that kind of imagination that I think is just, it's fantastic. I think it serves us really well. But at its core, I think DEF CON is a little bit of Burning Man, a little bit of CES, a little bit of Interop, in that it's just trying to bring together like-minded people who want to collaborate. They want to share ideas, they want to share their knowledge, and they want to share their view of the world. And I think that's why I also want to bring in one of our sponsors, Citrix, with GoToMeeting with HD Faces, because they're all about sharing. They're all about collaborating. They're all about allowing other people to share ideas in a forum that's easy to use, that's comfortable. Now, anyone who has watched a Twitch show knows GoToMeeting. You know that they're a sponsor of the show, they're a sponsor of the network, and, you see them everywhere. But I personally have stake invested in GoToMeeting because I've used it. It saved my rear on more than a few occasions. GoToMeeting, if you haven't used it, it's a combination of a lot of services that we've had since the beginning of the internet. Everything from Skype to NetMeeting to FaceTime. You know, in the past, we've been able to hold meetings by kludging together various tools to share documents, to share video, to share audio. But it's always felt as if it is a kludge. It's something that we put together that's not supposed to be there. And, that's just no longer acceptable. What GoToMeeting with HD Faces will do is it will take all those services, your video sharing, your audio sharing, your document sharing, and it puts it into an interface that is easy to use even if you don't really know how to use a computer. If you can run your email client, if you can use Outlook, if you know how to set up a meeting invitation over the internet, you can use GoToMeeting. On a personal note, GoToMeeting has saved my job because, in my real job, I'm actually a national director for my religious order back in Washington, D.C. One of the biggest challenges that I had when I first got there was the creation of the, what we'll call them promotional brochures, essentially the faces and the bios of the people who were entering our religious order every year. It was an incredibly long process because we had 9 different provinces, regions, and the directors and the associate directors associated with each of those regions, which meant anytime we made a brochure, we had to fire off emails and mock-ups back and forth. And every time someone wanted to change something, it torpedoed the whole thing and we started over. Well, it was so frustrating that I gave GoToMeeting a try. And what I did was I invited all the directors, all the people who had a stake in the brochures, to be on the same meeting. We had the designer right there. So he showed them the design, he showed them the style, and they were actually able to say yay or nay to the different design elements, which meant that, well, we got it all done in a day. GoToMeeting chopped 8 months off of my production cycle, and I will never forget that. And so I'm a firm believer in GoToMeeting. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to show your support for TWiET by going to GoToMeeting and trying it. Try GoToMeeting with HD Faces. See what it will do for you and see that it really is different than anything else you've ever tried. Right now, see how easy GoToMeeting with HD Faces is. My listeners can try it free for 30 days. And don't wait. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code ENTERPRISE. Be sure to use the promo code ENTERPRISE so that we get credit, and we thank Citrix and GoToMeeting with HD Faces for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, back to the action. We are here with our main guest, Mr. Matthew Gass from Aerohive, who is going to tell us about BYOD. Matthew, what is BYOD?
Well, it means a lot of things, and it seems like it's one of those terms that oftentimes it gets tossed around, and a lot of people mean different things when they say it. It's an acronym for Bring Your Own Device, and it generally refers to the fact that anybody who really has used computers for a long time, you know, I'm feeling kind of old in this industry now, and I guess you know, everybody keeps telling me I'm not that old, but I remember a world before Facebook and Twitter, and I remember having to set up an Ethernet network when I wanted to have one. and as you might expect, you grow up with technology, and you're just accustomed to using what you want. The number of times I've brought my own laptop into work, which was a really early form of BYOD before we decided to make it sound like drinking. So I've done that for years. This is just it. It's an acronym that encompasses the fact that all kinds of people want to bring whatever device they have, whatever device they're comfortable with, into work and use it and get their job done. A lot of times at larger organizations, the IT department isn't as agile as an individual user is, especially one who is willing to stand in a gigantic line on launch day at the Apple Store.
Okay, so when we talk about BYOD, the reason why it's scary for some is because it's taking a controlled environment and making it quite uncontrolled. The people working in enterprise are used to being able to know exactly what's plugging into the network, the laptops and the desktops. With BYOD, especially with people bringing, well, let's be honest here, people bringing Apple devices into the network, there's a level of uncertainty that most system administrators don't like. Brian, you're at a university. You must see this all the time.
Actually, I'm starting to deal with that right now with my video wall, which, oh, by the way, we're going to be looking at a little later, a couple shows. I've got a problem. I've got people want to use AirPlay. They want to be able to send the video from the iPad wirelessly to the video wall. Well, I don't want to let them into the control network because the control network for a lot of video processing gear, shall we say, is pathetic as far as security. So I need to go and firewall it off and be really, really careful about that. But yet I still need to be able to give them access. So I'm going to have to create a kind of homebrew BYOD. Now, Matthew's going to be talking a little bit about things like Bonjour gateways and so forth, steal a little bit of his fire, that basically allows you to have guest wireless. So instead of letting them have access to your internal network, which this is not a terribly good idea, you still want to give them access to things like printers, to AirPlay devices. Yeah, exactly. And the whole deal with this is we've been doing it, but we haven't been doing it as well as we could. And especially when you start getting into regulatory issues, I'm going to keep harping on that. The regulations mean you have to lock people away from certain pieces, especially when you start getting into things like stock trading and so forth. That starts getting really, really nasty as far as the regulations go. So having the guest network makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. And having a way of auditing that and controlling it nicely is a very big deal.
Curtis, it's not limited to universities, right? I mean, you've seen this in the real world enterprise where BYOD is, it's a troublesome topic.
It is a troublesome topic, and it's troublesome from a number of directions. Brian mentioned the regulatory issues. I mean, regulatory issues can be a nightmare for a lot of companies. The other thing that makes this really tough is that unlike many of the earlier episodes of technology being brought into the enterprise, this one is largely top down. The real troublemakers tend to be the people in the corner offices who are able to afford the latest and greatest toys and gadgets, want to bring them in and have them work as tools in the enterprise network. So for an IT guy, you're left with not only the technology issue, but the political issue. And that's creating all sorts of problems for IT people, for HR people, and everyone in between.
Curtis, you just named the issue that every sysadmin wishes that they could bring forward in every meeting. And that is, look, I know you're the CEO or the CFO, but it's really not a good idea if you bring in your unsecured wireless access point and plug it into our corporate network. Now, Matthew, tell me about the contain strategy.
Well, so there are really a couple of different types of networks. And traditionally, you have a corporate-oriented network where the IT department buys something on behalf of the company, configures it for you, and then that is a company device on the company network. You have company credentials, and that's pretty well understood. Then you also had guest networks where it was, here's whatever happens to come in. We are not going to issue something in our corporate Active Directory. And BYOD is trying to blend both of those together into a new third type of network, where if you have something that is, if you have a device which is owned by the company, you can have greater access to resources than if you have somebody just coming in. So the picture we've got on the screen right now illustrates that, where in the right-hand side, you have a corporate device which is able to print because you may want to allow printing for employees. But if you look at what users maybe bring in, we'll take Brian's example of having a video wall and wanting to expose AirPlay to that, to display to that. That you would want to enable to guest devices that have just come in. And so you want these all of these services to exist on both networks and be accessible, but you may want to control what is available to guests so that you reassert some of that control. You can make that service available, but not to everybody.
I think one of the issues here that's actually quite important is we want to create this contain strategy. We want to contain these different levels of policy in a way that the user doesn't have to care about it. The user doesn't need to worry about what he's plugging into or how he's connecting. So in essence, we want an enterprise-class solution, but we want to keep the ease of use of say, a consumer, a Bonjour gateway or an AirPlay access point. Now, tell me a little bit about where that leads us to. I mean, if we are starting to see devices in the enterprise that are taking advantage of the protocols and the security policies built into these rogue devices, where does that take us in the next 3-4 years?
Well, the biggest thing that we're seeing is that there are a number of devices that are they serve a single purpose really, really well. And so you have Brian's video wall, and you want to be able to make that available. How do you do that? And Apple has done a fabulous job in making everything work together and be integrated. In fact, I was looking at the chat room display, and I saw somebody say, but this is all great, but isn't the problem that with AirPlay, you can only use it on the same broadcast domain? And that has been a problem. We actually spent some time looking into how to address that here at Aerohive. So if we go to the display, I'll give you the really quick overview of how this works. So we've got the blue network on the left that has services. We have a red network on the right that has an AP and allows you to get on that network. Now, you would never design a network like this. I've got the two APs on different subnets. And the only purpose for doing that is to show what's available and what's not. So in this situation that we've got right now, where the iPad is on the blue subnet, it can access everything on the blue subnet. It's basically like a big home network. You want to use AirPlay? Fine. Same VLAN, everything just works like it should. But if you go over to the red network, so if you, then you're over there, all of that link local stuff that happens just doesn't happen anymore, and so therefore you don't see anything. So no AirPlay for you. When you turn on this Bonjour gateway feature that we've built into our access points, then what that does is it collects advertisements on the blue network. So the AirPlay will come up, and when it first comes up, it advertises its existence. Then it does that in response to queries. We know that there's an AirPlay device out there on the blue network. We can then share that between the two APs. And we have to share information between APs anyway, because we have to handle roaming users and a lot of other stuff. So you say, all right, I've learned that there is an Apple TV. I've got AirPlay in a particular location. I'm going to share that. And so we take the service list and we say, hey, guess what? Over on the blue network, we know that there's AirPlay. So at that point, it's then possible to do what's called a proxy advertisement. And this AP over on the red network says, there is an AirPlay device. You can pick up on that with the iPad, and you can go ahead and use it, even though you're on a completely different subnet. That does go through whatever routers you have. So if you have an extremely paranoid IT department that has put firewalls in place, it still may not work. This allows you to bridge that advertisement across however large a network you already have.
So you're talking about device-specific security rather than subnet-specific security.
Yeah. And there's actually another interesting thing that I'll call out of the chat room, which is that somebody said, why can't you just take a single iPad and a single Apple TV and put them together? And the trouble with that is that AirPlay is a very simple protocol. If you have an Apple TV, it will accept a connection from anybody, so that it's basically the last one in wins. This is a problem that a number of school districts are looking at, because they have teachers who are on iPads and the students are all following along. You may be displaying via AirPlay to a TV in the room, and the students have an equal right as far as the network, perhaps not socially or in terms of what's in the classroom, but students are able to just go ahead and find that Apple TV device and use it. So that's really the next frontier in how we do this. Now that we've made it available, now we have to make it less available. Sort of like it was a big challenge to get the internet everywhere. Now, just as we need to put in firewalls, we need to do the same thing here in BYOD.
Well, that's a timeless debate, right? Because system admins want to lock everything down. I mean, the most secure network is a network that's off, whereas the most usable network is a network that's completely open. So you're trying to find a balance between the two. Now, Chibert, tell me, what are the security risks of doing something like this? Because it seems to me that although this is incredibly convenient, there are issues when you start allowing your network to give secure connections to devices that are no longer connected to the secured subnets of your network.
Actually, I think Stimpy Cat in the chat room has it right. You're going to start getting bikini babes on the beach instead of today's lesson. One of the great fears that I have is, and the reason why I spent so much money on the firewall for my video wall, is that I've got that video wall playing what is in essence a big ad. We have pictures of our research going most of the day. Now, I really, really, really don't want someone to go and say, put porn up on my video wall. That would be bad. My chancellor might have words with me. I don't want people able to go and throw confidential information, you know, onto a printer, say out in the student lounge or something like that. So being able to control all this UPnP, Bonjour, you know, all this peer-to-peer auto-discovery stuff is great, but I need to be able to control that so that it doesn't get out of control.
Yeah, Matthew, I want to throw that back to you. That's a very valid concern. If we are now building the technology into our network to allow a device, and it could be a student or it could be a CEO, to roam from the secure part of the network to the insecure part of the network, what guarantees or what technologies can I use to make sure that they're not either exposing information that really needs to stay confidential or that they're not accessing sites that are not appropriate for that particular side of the network?
Well, and a lot of this comes back to the network that you've already built. Wi-Fi is not magical new technology. It takes advantage of the network you've already built. So you want to keep people from accessing things that they shouldn't in terms of, say, websites. That's already built into the network if that's a concern. As far as specific internal services like we're talking about here, fortunately, Wi-Fi has strong user authentication already built in. So we know who users accessing the network are. And that could be people you have in a guest directory somewhere, or it could also be a guest registration system so that you know that this user is a particular type of guest or a contractor. And based on that, you can assign some form of access rights. Then because the Wi-Fi network is in this really nice position as far as being at the edge of the network and being able to take things like Bonjour and UPnP and then make them visible only to one user. And this is something that we can do on Wi-Fi because you can turn a multicast frame that goes everywhere into a very targeted direct frame to a particular user. And you can use that to take this network-wide or this VLAN-wide advertisement and turn it from something that goes everywhere into something that's targeted and goes where you want it to. So the next phase of this is to build that capability in and give the network administrators the control that they're looking for.
Curtis, is that enough? I mean, can we just give network admins the interface for, say, an Aerohive mesh Wi-Fi network that enables the Bonjour gateway and say, okay, figure out the policies? Or are we asking for trouble by having this much connectivity between subnets?
Well, there is only so much technology can do. One of the things that we are apt to do in this industry is look for a technology solution to every problem. The fact is that there is a level at which you really have to depend upon the quality of your users, their willingness to abide by the social or legal or employment contracts that bind them into the group. So can we help the administrator make those decisions easier for the users? Absolutely. Can we, as IT administrators, defend our networks against unauthorized users? Absolutely. Can we defend in every case against some legitimate user doing something bad on the system? No. Those are the cases in which we have to be able to go in, respond quickly, to get some sort of amelioration in process to take care of the problem after it's there, and deal with the human being on a human basis after that. So can the technology help? You bet. Can the technology make everything bulletproof? Not yet.
Okay, I want to shift gears a little bit because we've been talking about security policy. We've been talking about the handing off of devices from one side of the network to the other. But there is another part of BYOD, and that is the actual radios that are serving them. You have a specific vision of what works better. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it all comes back to the fact that the AP is only half the link. So I've got my laptop here. It's got nice big antennas in the back of the screen. This happens to be a particularly old laptop, so it's relatively slow. It's only 2Stream 11N. It's got a couple of antennas. It goes 300 megabits. That is way better than the tiny antennas I have in this phone. This is a single stream end device. It's limited by the tiny battery in it. And the amount of performance between these two devices is very, very different. One of the ways that expresses itself is that if you look at the radio link, it's symmetric. So you've got two sides to the link. It's a conversation. If one side falls down, it's not going to be a very interesting conversation. One of the investments that we've made is to look at the quality of the radio in the AP. And the reason for doing that is that it doesn't help if you're having a conversation and you have a bullhorn and you're talking to somebody who whispers back to you. You have to make it work in both directions. So it's not enough to shout louder. You also have to listen better. And just as it is with human interaction, where listening is often a harder skill, in this case, building a radio that listens well is also something that requires a little bit of extra effort on the part of the product designer. One of the analogies that I use is that this is a lot like, well, it's a lot like audio. I finally got around to building my own home theater. And one of the things that I noticed about this process is that when I upgraded to an amp that had 200 watts per channel of pure power, which is far more than I need, mental note, next time I get an amp, I should get one that I can lift easily. But it sounds phenomenal, probably because I have highly sensitive speakers, and so therefore I don't have to run this amp hardly at all. It's not breaking a sweat. And by getting to a point where you can have the amp in its comfort zone as opposed to running flat out, that gives you a much less distorted signal. And it's just like if I were to start shouting, I would lose control over some aspects of my voice. It'd sound very distorted. You can hear this in a car if you listen to any of the bass competitions that go on, that in order to get the sound to be that loud, it's necessary to turn it way up. And by building a radio that has more headroom, we're able to better serve single radio devices. And those single radio devices are often things like phones and iPads. By the way, I just love the way that we always say tablet when we really mean iPad, because Apple's market share in the tablet market is like 2/3. We say tablet, and I'm not entirely sure why. But these are devices, and especially with the iPad, it's a beautiful device. You got the front end of it is glass. The back end of it is metal. So if you look at how it goes, you can get the signal out of one end much better than out of the back end because the back is metal. So even the orientation you have as you walk down the hall and change the way that you're oriented relative to the AP, you need to change the way that you're talking to it, because you may get the signal dramatically changing as you go from having the back of a device, the metal back of a device facing the AP, towards going to having the glass end of the device face the AP.
So what you're talking about is having devices that will have better communication qualities. Essentially, you have radios that are higher wattage, higher quality. You have devices that communicate more cleanly. And then freeing up, say, the 2.4 gigahertz range for single band devices while using 5 gigahertz for the multiple band devices.
And that's also a big part of what you have to do. And that's just good network design. Okay. Thankfully, the 5 gig band has now been built into everything. You don't even have to know it's there. Lots of enterprise-grade devices. It's very easy to build a network that takes those dual-band capable devices, moves them into 5 gig, and it leaves you with 2.4 for devices that are really either low power. A lot of phones are 2.4 gig only, although many tablets, because they can be designed around a bigger battery, are dual-band capable, and that really helps.
Although I point out in the chat room, someone pointed out that a lot of iPhones are 2.4 gigahertz devices, whereas a lot of Android phones are 5. But let's not go there, because that's a different debate. I do want to throw this back to Brian and Curtis, because a lot of people don't think of this part of the BYOD phenomenon, and that is, yes, you need to build your network so that it's secure, so that you can hand off your credentials from one subnet to the other. But you also need to build for the device. And if you have a lot of people coming in with 2.4 only devices, say, you know, iPhones, you need to find a way to either increase the amount of available clean bandwidth, or you need to find a way to move all the other devices to the 5 gigahertz range so you can free up the 2.4 for the devices coming in. I would assume that you've seen that a lot, Jeeber, yes?
Oh, yeah. I have seen it at Interop. I've seen it when, in those rare cases, the military gets to use Wi-Fi. And I've definitely seen that at the University of Hawaii. 2.4 gigahertz in a lot of our buildings is an absolute disaster. And mostly because a lot of the people implementing it, they just take it out of the box, turn it on, and everything's, for some reason, default full blast. So with everybody's APs screaming, it's really hard, especially with all the metal in our buildings, with all this Wi-Fi bouncing around. It's absolute disaster. Now, 5.8.
I was just going to say, Curtis, you've seen this too, right? Because you do as many conferences as the rest of us combined. And in those environments where, as Matthew pointed out, it's mostly iPads and iPhones, 2.4 dies. And so any security concerns you may have had, any kind of network protocols you've built in to safely and securely hand off your devices, dies with the band.
That's right. I mean, let's face it, all the security that we want to talk about really doesn't mean anything if no one can get on and use the service anyway. That's one of the places where an enterprise has an advantage with BYOD over a conference organizer. With a conference, you're really forced to accept pretty much whatever technology your conference attendees want to bring in. With BYOD, you do have the option of saying, yes, you can bring your device, but it does have to conform to certain minimum standards. We're seeing that in a lot of different companies. They'll either give an approved list or give a list of approved minimum technologies. And I think that's really the direction to go for the future, to make sure that everyone can adequately use the resources that the enterprise is able to put out.
All right, so BYOD final word. For those looking at implementing BYOD policies at their enterprise on their network, what do they need to consider? What are the things that they absolutely need to look at in order to do a successful deployment? Jibert, let's start with you.
Actually do a heat map. I've seen so many installations where people just absolutely ignore the RF from other devices. You know, there's a lot of heat map software out there. Go do a heat map so you actually know what kind of coverage you're getting and know where the edges are. So when your tech support people get all these calls, at least they're prepared with a decent answer.
Curtis, what about you? BYOD, I'm deploying it in my enterprise. What's my 30-day shortlist?
I think the first thing you have to do is look at what you're trying to accomplish. After that, you look at what the minimum technology is to let you do that. I come back to this idea of having minimal acceptable technology. Make a list of what any device brought in has to be able to do. Make sure that syncs up with what you intend BYOD to accomplish, and it makes everything else from a technology perspective much easier.
Matthew, I'm going to give you the last word because you're our wonderful in-studio guest. Tell me, what are the two things I need to consider most when I'm deploying BYOD?
Make sure that you have already built a network that supports what you want to do with it, and don't start until you've got that done. Then, once you have the network in place, figure out how you're going to get devices on the network and let them do things that will make users productive.
Fantastic. Okay, so that is, that's about all the time we've got for the BYOD discussion. It's not over, though, because there are so many different ways to look at BYOD. There are so many different ways for you to deploy a BYOD policy in your network. But I do want to give my guest a chance to shout out. Matthew, let's start with you. What are you doing these days that you want our Twiat listeners to take a look at?
Well, earlier this year, I had a book on 802.11n come out. And right now, I'm working on a book on 802.11ac, the next generation gigabit Wi-Fi standard.
Okay. And of course, everyone's going to need to read up on that, assuming that AC ever goes to a finalized standard rather than draft. But yeah, That's good. So read the book and then read the other book and then come back and report to us. Cheebert, what do you have going on in the beautiful Isle of Hawaii?
I'm actually starting to set up a tech support database and trouble ticketing system, and I want to give a shout out to the folks in Boise, Idaho at kayako.com, KAYAKO.com. A great system, and it can be done either download or SaaS.
Okay. And Curtis, in Florida, I assume you've got things afoot.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to be gone from Twiat in a couple of weeks, actually, right after the Olympics, heading over to the UK to see some stuff over there. But before that, I want to invite people to come by and check out not only Enterprise Efficiency, the great community we have there, but our Enterprise Efficiency group on LinkedIn and our page on Facebook. It's a wonderful community of CIOs, most of whom know far more about this than I do. We'd love for the listeners and viewers of TWiET to come and join us, pitch their expertise into the mix.
Now, I do want to remind anyone who might be listening to this podcast downloaded that you can always watch us live, Mondays, noon, PST. Join the chat room and you'll be able to throw questions to us during the show. You may have heard our guest actually referring to things that our chat room has said. That's part of the TWiET experience. It's part of the TWiET experience. Also, I want to thank all of you who have downloaded the podcast for putting us in the top 10 of downloaded iTunes podcasts for 2 weeks running. Please go subscribe, download audio, download video. Make sure you download the HD video because you know what? It just is a better experience when you see me in 720p. Probably not. Oh, well. Also, if you have a chance, please drop by the show page at twit.tv/TWiET. You'll be able to find show notes. You'll be able to contribute to the wiki, and you'll be able to jump into the Reddit page, which really, really needs some love. Remember, we've got guests coming in next week from Avago, a man by the name of Saul Espino, who's going to tell us all about RF design. I'm going to be showing you off a new gadget for finding out how to best deploy your Wi-Fi devices. And, well, we may just have some new stuff, my IT guy says. So stay tuned. Stay tabbed. And remember, if you want to find out about the enterprise, just keep TWiET.